This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by Mook Delivery, bringing you the food you love. Mook Delivery, like McKenna, brings a top-tier lineup. With Leif Davis-esque delivery right to your door, you'll always be winning with Mook Delivery. So the only thing left to say is, you win. Order now on the McDonald's app, and you can also get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus. Rewards registration required. Points only on menu items. Delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Hello, you are listening to the Blue Monday podcast. This is a 3 times weekly audio show looking into the exciting happenings of Ipswich Town Football Club. My name is Benjamin Bloom, and I'll be here each and every Friday. But no, it's not going to be on a Friday. It's a special one. Each and every Tuesday, on the odd Tuesday, for the Blue Monday preview show, we have a special guest to get their insider view on the next opponents for Ipswich Town. So yes, that intro was completely hackneyed because, sorry, there was no preview show on Friday, but this is a special bonus one, a midweek preview show, which we've had in the works. So ahead of the Sunderland game, please welcome representing Sunderland and the Roker Report podcast. Thank you, Graham. Welcome.
Hey, mate. You all right? You good?
I'm good, yeah. You're probably incredibly depressed and suicidal.
Yes.
Are you going to be, tell me, are you going to be better or worse than the Bolton fan we had on last week?
Worse.
Your
I
expectations
think.
Are higher, aren't they?
Not that much higher, but, you know, Sunderland have an ability to make your expectations, no matter how low they may be, come down just a little bit below that. So,
okay, so another Samaritans podcast for everybody. But no, we'll have some fun, Graham. Where can our listeners sample your work in print and on podcasts, especially this week, given it's Ipswich?
Yeah, of course. So Roker Report is online. That's where kind of our main source is, truth be told. I believe it's, and this is terrible, I should know this, but I believe it's just rokerreport.com. Yes, it is. It's rokerreport.com. We are effectively a blog site, but we've, if I don't mind saying so myself, got some really talented writers on there that have been doing stuff for a long, long time. We do a little bit on tactics. We do opinion pieces. RokerReport.com, like, sample it for yourself. If not, it's nothing if but passionate. You've got a lot of differing opinions because you can never speak for a fan base, so we don't always get agreements from certain sides. But in the podcast, we do one every Sunday, which I've done today, actually a little bit earlier on. So my second podcast of the day, my second level of second bout of depression, should I say, to get out. And that's available on iTunes. That's the Roker Rapport. So rather than rapport, it's rapport. They'll play on words there. But yeah, you can sample it on Facebook. You can follow us at Roker Report, which is on Twitter as well. There's not a great deal going on that's fun with our club, but thankfully, you know, Sunderland fans have all had a sense of humour. So the Twitter page is quite fun at the best of times.
And for all those people I've directed to Acast, you can get the Roker Report through Acast as well.
Yes, that's
where I get it. Cool. Right, before we go into current matters, what's your vintage? When did you start out, and what sold it for you?
It was 1993-94 season. We played Wolves at home. We got beat 2-0. So I'm not too sure if that sold it to me. But it was Roker Park. I would have been in 93. Well, I was born in 86, so I was young. I was really, really young. And I just remember the kind of togetherness of people following one team, we all groaned together, we all kind of cheered together, although there wasn't that much cheering at that point. And I think I was quite lucky, I suppose, in a sense that when you're from the Northeast, like, football is, you know, whether it's Newcastle or whether it's Sunderland, football's kind of in your blood, essentially. And I think my dad, obviously, my dad's mood depended on how Sunderland were doing. So I think I picked up on that. And then when I went to the game, Roker Park was amazing. I mean, it was, it wasn't...
What did Roker Park hold, Graham?
It was 20,000, I think.
Yeah, because it wasn't 18,000. And it was all terraces as well, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was amazing. It was the best. I used to sit in the Falwell end on the little bars once when I was really, really young. I used to love it, but I ended up going towards the clock stand. But I think I was quite lucky in the sense that we were bad at that point, kind of like mid-table Division One as it was. But within two or three seasons, Peter Reid took charge. And
I'm thinking, I mean, the rest Steve Agnew, Paul Bracewell, would that be about right?
Yep, Steve Agnew. Yeah, yeah, you were totally right. It was just after. 93 was kind of like Don Goodman, Phil Gray, Gary Owers, Gordon Armstrong. But then like a year later, it was like, you know, the players you mentioned there, Paul Bracewell. Well, Bracewell's been in and out of our club like four or five times, both as a player and as a backroom staff. But yeah, Steve Agnew was one of my favourites as a kid. Yeah, had terrible teeth.
So just out of interest, how did you react to the stadium move then?
It was at the time, I remember it really, really well. I think it had to happen. And I think my favourite memories of being a Sunderland fan is those first couple of seasons in the stadium. It felt like a new dawn. It felt like a fortress. I think everyone was sceptical, but I was probably quite lucky that I'd only had like four seasons or so at Roker Park. And then getting into the Stadium of Light was... I mean, it's not the same now, and I don't know if you've been, but
I went when it was frankly terrifying, yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, it was amazing when it first started. I mean, in the Championship, well, Division One as it was
never,
then.
Never lost there, did you?
No, we just didn't lose. It was a total fortress, and I mean, any team would come, and it got to a point where I remember playing Manchester United a few seasons after it was the season after we got promoted, and we were third off top, and... I remember just not even doubting that we'd beat them. It was a draw, but we were 2-0 up in 20 minutes, and it were 12 minutes, I think, and they pulled it back. But the Stadium Light, I wish it could go back to that. I don't think it ever will, but the first few seasons, I think the quality of players we had, the atmosphere we had, we were riding on like the crest of a wave, and there was a big change and shift. Peter Reid had changed the mindset of what Sunderland fans had come to expect, and it seems like a million miles away. Like a year, it feels like, you know, a different world compared to where we are now, to be honest. But the stadium move, yeah, it was, I grew up seeing big stadiums, so to see my team have a big stadium it was kind of proud. It was nice.
No, it just fascinates me because I can't imagine Ipswich not playing at Portman Road. But what we normally do is we go over last season's meetings, but obviously you were Billy Big Bollocks in the Premier League, weren't you? So
allegedly.
Yeah, this might turn a little bit dark now, and you're allowed to mention Martin Bain and Ellis Short. Is it that Sunderland have ended up in the Championship, and how long does this need to go back to, do you know what I'm saying? When did this drop down really start?
There was a period of time. I mean, a lot of it could have been fixed along the way at this point. So I'm taking you back quite far. There's many points in this road where it could have been fixed, I think. But we were about sixth off top under Steve Bruce going into sort of January time. And Darren Bent moved to Aston Villa for
Darren
24
Bent,
million.
Indeed, hey? For favourite of ours.
Darren Bent, indeed. Not one of mine. used to be, but not a big fan of the guy.
I think we've made a lot of money in sell-on fees from Darren Bent over the years.
So. Certainly off us, yeah, certainly off us. But he left. He went to Aston Villa, who at the time were like 15th, and they were on that kind of downward trajectory that they're still sort of on and just getting out of. And we never really replaced him. We went on a horrific, typical Steve Bruce run. towards the end of the season. But when we got into the summer, we sold Henderson for big money. We still had the Darren Bent money. Asamoah Gyan went as well to Saudi Arabia, I think. No, it was Qatar.
I remember.
And we kind of replaced it with substandard players like, and I mean, I love the guy because full of effort, but players like Seb Larson were just not in the same quality as Jordan Henderson, Craig Gardner, like those sort of players came in, and we had a terrible start of the season. Then Martin O'Neill came in, and we had a great 3 months, and then it all turned to shit. And effectively, we kind of spent big on players like He Who Shall Not Be Named and Stephen Fletcher, players along sort of that line, who didn't really produce for the money that was being spent. And if you look back at the history of the players that we'd signed and how much money we made back on them, I think there was a period where there was 30-plus players and we only made money back on three of them, which is outstandingly bad business. And it just shows you how short-sighted the whole thing was. And we went through a succession of sacking managers, Di Canio, Poyet, and none of it seemed to work. But what you find was happening with that was season upon season, you had a new manager who had just kind of had like the crest of a wave by helping us stay up. Di Canio had it, Advocaat had it, Poyet had it, all had this crazy end to a season where we'd stay up miraculously and win like seven games or whatever towards the end of the season. But essentially, when it comes into the season, they start poorly again. Then they get sacked, and then a new manager would come in, perform the miracle. But the problem that you had is you have a mishmash of players that have been signed by Di Canio, O'Neill, Poyet, Advocaat. So you had people like Jermaine Lenz at one point, for example, £13 million. And he was there for 3 months, and Advocaat resigned. Allardyce came in, didn't want him. And I mean, Allardyce, God, it feels like a million miles ago, a million years ago. But there was only really Allardyce that managed to fix it, actually. And then the England job came along and we just went to shit again. And I think the problem we had was basically we had so many players on high wages that the managers wanted rid of so they could bring their own men in, but they'd be gone within like 6 months to a year. So we were just hemorrhaging money. And suddenly the manager, the owner, reins it in and says, well, no, we can't be doing that anymore. I want to do it this way and that way, the other way. And you get David Moyes, who comes in and just totally drains the life out of the entire football club. There's so many reasons. I would need a good 3 or so hours to kind of go through why everything had gone wrong. But essentially, it all culminated in sort of last season where we just didn't have any money. The money we had, we spent on absolute rubbish. We spent a lot of our money on like in installments as well. So we're still paying for like Fabio Barini, Papi Diabogi. Like we're still playing for players that like we can't even sell. Like, and even this season, that's the thing.
Scarily like Leeds. Do you remember when they were playing? Still playing for Robbie Fowler and Nick Barmby years after Michael Duvery and. I'm trying to think who the other ones were, you know.
You had Rio Ferdinand, stuff like that. Yeah. I mean, they got money back for him, but there was so many. And it is. I mean, it's total mismanagement. And I think the problem you have is you've got a businessman who was in charge of the club trying to, I mean, to put the mismanagement of Sunderland into a perspective, I didn't mention him before, but I'll mention it. The whole Adam Johnson situation. You look at that. Now, our CEO at that time, Margaret Byrne, allegedly knew about the majority of what was in the case and what he'd said had happened. And she allowed him to continue playing for Sunderland. Total disrespect of the fans for doing that, first and foremost. But second of all, that's the mismanagement that you've got in the club. You've got someone who just doesn't understand football from the top, and he hires people who don't understand football. And now you've got Martin Bain, who's just effectively trying to, as far as I can see, strip the club of all of its assets. And then when it's in a position where it can be sold at a loss, then I'm sure Ella Short will walk. But hopefully he goes a bit sooner than that.
So the only common denominator through all of this is Short. Yes, this is where your This is where the blame goes, yes?
Yeah, I think so. I don't think intentionally he started it to make a mess of it. I don't think he's a bad person necessarily. I think he made a lot of mistakes, and quite possibly he was too stubborn to stop making those mistakes. And now he's kind of just got bored with it and realized how much of a mess he's made of the whole thing. And he's just trying to claw everything back. But the club's dead right now. Like, it's really dead. Like, it's lost everything that it was ever about.
Wow. So you come down eventually, and I kind of looked at it, and I listened to your podcast before the start of the season, and you're looking at it, and it's like, okay, well, Grayson has been a manager for a long, long, long time. It's far away from, say, Di Canio or Poyet or something. And he managed in this league last season. So that made sense. That made sense to me. Vaughan McGeady Graben. Well, that's not, you know, Dilibodji or, you know, Larson or whatever. They're championship players. And they'd cleared out some of the high earners and got good money for the goalie. I must admit, I thought you'd end up getting our goalie, but obviously they went in a bit lower and they went for Steele from Blackburn.
From Blackburn.
I actually thought when it was all set up, I thought, oh, this looks quite a good cleanse, and I thought they're kind of doing the right thing. Did you feel that before a ball was kicked?
I think the hopes and the expectations that we had, I don't think anyone looked at promotion. I think we wanted a season of solidifying ourselves and just kind of stopping the rot of losing all the time. I mean, obviously that hasn't happened, but I think the appointment of Grayson was, I wasn't enthused by it, but when it happened, I was kind of like, I could make sense of it. I thought, you know, he's a mid-table manager that's worked on a budget. He knows the division. He knows what it's like to go to Ipswich on a Tuesday night, for example. He'll understand what the situation is. But I think the more the season's gone on in this first quarter, the more I've sort of realised it's not always... What you need at Sunderland is you need someone who will fire you up. If you look at which managers have been successful at Sunderland throughout my lifetime, you've got managers with character, with attitude almost, and with almost a bit of a swagger. Peter Reid, Sam Allardyce, you know, to name but two of the successful managers that we've had. Even Mick McCarthy, to an extent, although he had a really poor Premiership season, he got a rank average side up to the Premiership, and I mean super league, like really rank average. But like, I just feel Grayson doesn't have that. He might have the know-how, although tactically he's been a little bit disappointing. Although we're only 10 or so games into the season, I'm willing to see that change. The problem I've got at the moment is I think he's... Sunderland have so many deep-rooted problems, like from the top all the way down, the fan base, the apathy that it feels, the depression that Sunderland are kind of... It just feels like we're sleepwalking towards another relegation, if I'm honest. But if you look at Grayson, I don't know if knowing the division and working on a budget is enough to resurrect Sunderland right now. I think you need someone with bottle and big bollocks. You need someone with big bollocks, like, because it's a huge job, and I think the job's too big for him. But I didn't think that originally.
Yeah, I must confess, my thing about Grayson, where I found him most impressive, I remember, I think it was the season before last, Preston got up and they had a bad run, and I just remember him like shutting up shop, and they didn't concede a goal for about six games or something, and it's kind of in the adversity he went from bottom up and he did kind of well. So in that respect, he's kind of got that good quality. I was just when I saw it, I was because you know we've had all this stuff with McCarthy last year, and there's been managers and stuff linked, and if you take the Cowley guys at Lincoln, who everyone was so impressed with last year, you'd think something like Sunderland would swallow them up completely, you know, with their, you know, even though they're bright young things or whatever. And you just kind of look at it and you think, oh, Grayson's got broad enough shoulders to do it. But from what you're saying, the only guy who actually had broad enough shoulders to do it ended up being the England manager. So, you know, a very high caliber manager.
Yeah, I mean, Allardyce played for the club, so Allardyce knew what he was coming into. Allardyce he's almost got an arrogance about himself.
Massively, yeah.
Yeah, totally. But you know what? We don't love arrogance. That's not the right word. But we love someone who's got a bit of character, who is a bloke. Like, he's a bloke that would get that area. He understood it. He also knows how to build a team. We've gone through so many different avenues, like the young manager in Poyet, the vitriolic kind of like mentalist in Paolo Di Canio. I mean, Roy Keane was another very successful manager for us.
Stop.
I loved Roy Keane for Sunderland. I funnily enough, when the season started, I would say the clamour for, I mean, football fans always go back into, remember when this was amazing and remember that period and la la la. But there was a lot of people wanted Roy Keane. There was a big clamour for Roy Keane. And Roy Keane's the kind of person that gets a club like Sunderland. It may not have got Ipswich or understood what Ipswich was about, but you need someone like Roy Keane, Sam Allardyce, Peter Reid, that kind of attitude. Kind of, Di Canio kind of had the right passion. He was just absolutely mental. If he was not mental, maybe Di Canio might have worked as well. But you need someone like that. And Grayson is just a bit unassuming. He's not exactly inspiring. When he comes in, the most positive thing you can say is, well, he knows the Championship. And with all due respect to the Championship itself and our position in the Championship, on the face of it, we're a Premiership club in every way, shape, size and form.
Interesting. Very, very interesting. I just find the Championship like the most unique kind of shitstorm of loads and loads of games. Some players who are pretty good, but all have one key weakness, so they're not quite, top level. It's a very unique thing. So listen, the first actual four games was good. So you drew at home to Derby on the TV, and Derby spend lots of money. You beat Bury in the League Cup. Great win away at Norwich, who with their
terrific win.
And a draw away at Sheffield Wednesday again there. So that's unbeaten against three of the wealthier, bigger teams. You must have been happy with the start.
Yeah, it was kind of probably slightly better than we hoped, because our first five games looked quite tough. You had like Derby, Norwich, Sheffield, Leeds, and then Barnsley away. And Barnsley, you look at that as the easier game, but they still did quite well last year, Barnsley. And we started well against Derby. We were probably quite unlucky to go 1-0 down. We pulled it back, showed a lot of fight and desire, and like the fans, that was a good game. Like it felt like something was coming back. Like we got rid of the time wasters and stuff like that. And then we went to Norwich and battered Norwich, who I tipped to win the league, which I'm probably going to be wrong with completely.
Hope so.
For you anyway, for sure. Then we went to Chef Wed and performed really well. But the second half, we sat back a little bit too much. But everyone kind of attested when, these players are not used to playing that many games in the Championship, and this often, maybe they were tired. It's still a draw at Chef Wed. That's a good result. And then Leeds came to the stadium a lot, and, it was a shock to get beat, because it's kind of like that reality hit of being in the Premiership for 10 years, then like a Championship team come and do you at home. It's always going to be a shock, but everyone kind of went, Leeds are probably going to be there about. And Leeds were genuinely quite impressive. But I think what our big problem is we can't stop conceding goals. Defensively, we're terrible. If we make a mistake, it gets punished. But the problem we have as well is we're all right-ish up. We're not all right-ish up top. We're not bad in midfield. We've got McManaman. We've got Johnny Williams, who's been really impressive so far. And you've got you've got Duncan Watmore to come back as well. But the problem we have is right up the top of the field, you can create as many chances as you want. You've got absolutely nobody to put that in the back of the net. So you're just you're just sitting there waiting to concede, because the defense is terrible. We don't create enough chances anyway, and when we do, we've got no one to put it in the back of the net. And Grayson came out and said he didn't feel he needed a striker. It's a mental statement. Absolutely crazy. I mean, James Vaughan's crap.
So I think where you guys probably, where it's turned is, like you said, 3-0 away at Barnsley, who, you know, you'd expect Sunderland to just to swallow up. Sheffield United at home, that's a team, you're two divisions apart from them, you lose, and you lose at home to Forest, and now it's all of a sudden, you'd have expected points in all of those games, really, wouldn't you?
Yeah, and I think the problem you have now as well is that the statistics all come popping up. I mean, we haven't won at the Stadium of Light since December the 17th, 2016. So to put that into perspective, I live in Glasgow and I'm home and away. Well, away when I can, but I'm a season ticket holder and I haven't seen Sunderland win in almost 11 months.
Wow.
Yeah, it's pretty worrying, and I think when it comes to playing at home, they can't win. But I think the evidence is there at the moment. I mean, we haven't got anyone in midfield that can really create, although that seems to be changing with Williams and McManaman, which have both been quite impressive so far.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like home comforts. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home advantage with McDelivery. You win. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee, and terms apply. See McDonald's.com.
Whether you need a VPN to protect your world online, to allow you to change your worldwide location virtually, or maybe a bit of both, NordVPN gives you the freedom to do so. NordVPN also allows you to stream TV shows, films, and even sporting events which aren't available in your local region, changing to a country which is showing that content, meaning you can switch as seamlessly as a Kira McKenna in-game tactical tweak with just one click. But that's not all. NordVPN can also look after you while online, preventing your card details and passwords from falling into the wrong hands, safeguarding your personal and sensitive information from harm. Think of it as a cyber Sam Morsey, offering protection to your own personal back four, but with far fewer yellow cards. NordVPN is available for the price of a cup of Bovril per month, and one account can be used across 6 different devices. Visit nordvpn.com/Blue Monday or click the link in the podcast description for more information about the offer and a risk-free 30-day money-back guarantee trial period. You'll also be helping out the pod by subscribing.
But James Vaughan's like 1 in 10, and Graben's injured with a hamstring injury for a few months, and a few weeks, and then literally just before Graben got injured, he came out and said, "I don't feel like I need a centre-forward." I mean, it's obvious we need a centre-forward. Like, at the start of the summer, we lost Defoe. We lost Barini, Nichibi went on a free transfer. And when we brought in James Vaughan, everyone, well, you know, you need like about 3 or 4 strikers in the championship. If Vaughan's third or fourth choice come on to make a nuisance of himself, fair enough. I think if they'd said he was going to be the number 9 in the first choice, I think we would have panicked then. When it got to the end of the transfer window and he said, "I don't feel like I need a striker." I don't know if he's just trying to save face for Ellis Short and Martin Bain not giving him any money to sign a striker, but there's just nothing up top. And we don't create loads. We create a little bit more since Williams and McManaman came in, but we don't create a lot. And we're just a calamity at the back. I don't think we've kept a clean sheet this season. Oh, no, we did a Berry, but, I mean, with all due respect to Berry, it's Berry. You'd expect to.
Wow. Okay, so the recent three games, a 1-1 draw at Hull, they can't seem to get going, a 3-0 loss at Everton in the League Cup, well, that's no shame, 2-1 at home to Cardiff yesterday, we're recording on Sunday night. So now, it goes from that good kind of first four to 6 defeats in 8, and only one league win all season. You've identified a horrible... a horrible tale of not scoring at one end and letting loads in at the other, which sounds... I've written down here what is happening, but that seems like a fairly potent losing potion, doesn't it?
Yeah, you've got a fan base that obviously... I mean, last season wasn't easy. And then everyone kind of like rolled up their sleeves and went, you know, like, bugger it. Let's have a go at this championship. You know, it might get a bit of, we might get some of the younger boys coming through. At least we'll not be near the bottom, hopefully. You know, worst case scenario, we might be lower mid table, but a couple of defeats, and I mean, four defeats at home, I think it is on the trot now, and obvious glaring problems that the manager's telling you is not a problem. You start asking questions, and it doesn't take long at a club like Sunderland to kind of have that apathy again. Like, we're so easy to stoke up. Like, we're great to play for. Like, the old, like Kevin Phillips said it, it's the best place to play your football when things are going well.
I've seen it at, Graham, I've seen it at Leeds yesterday. They're top of the league. There was 34,000 there, and there's just kind of something in the air in these big cities when... You know, when that's happening.
Totally. 100%. And Sunderland's the best place to play because people like Kevin Phillips, Niall Quinn, Kevin Ball, they'll never have to buy it like a pint in Sunderland again ever at any point. But on the flip side, if you're disrespectful towards a club, if you don't care, and if you're playing poorly, you want to just probably stay in the house because you're going to get shit when you go in the street. And it's no one would want that kind of like... their personal life invaded like that, but that's part and parcel playing for Sunderland. You have to understand that, you know, you can be a hero or villain quite easily, and it doesn't take much for that to happen. I mean, score against Newcastle, you're a hero. Like, scoring a derby game, scoring a cup final, you're a hero. You'll never be forgotten about. But if you are part of a side that... I mean, Sunderland at the same time, it's not like we've had a really good time of it at any point. I mean, I've seen us go down with 15 points from the Premiership. Then I've seen it... Well, 19 points, which was a record at the time. Then 15 points, we beat our own record. I've seen a lot of rubbish at Sunderland, and I think we actually are quite patient, but at the same time, because of the past five seasons, I think when things start turning and you get two or three defeats at home, we just don't accept that. And maybe that's a good thing, but it doesn't really help matters at the moment because... It just feels like poisonous, like the whole way through. We know we're being mismanaged. We know the board doesn't really care or they've got it wrong and have stopped caring. We know the guy that we got in charge is kind of probably... Well, I'm not speaking for everyone here, but my opinion is he's not big enough for the club. And maybe that's arrogant and maybe that's the 10 years in the Premiership. But I think we just all know... Sunderland is much more than what it's showing at the moment. We feel a little bit like a joke. We feel like the rest of the country is probably laughing at us.
Wow. In some ways, is Ipswich on a Tuesday night get away from the home defeats, you know, midweek game so you don't have the whole furore of the whole weekend around it? Is it kind of a good game for you to have?
Probably, because I think no one expects us to get anything in any game at the moment. We're probably slightly better on the counter-attack and we've probably got our better players back fit for the game on Tuesday. But I don't ever have good memories of Ipswich on a Tuesday night. I think my worst memory, which is weird considering how bad Sunderland have been, but the most sad or the saddest I've ever been after a match was, I think it was 98 when you beat us 2-0.
2-0. Matt Holland and Alex Maffey.
And that stopped,
yeah, that stopped you making the top two, and then you lost in the playoffs to Charlton, yeah?
We did, yeah. Good time to be a Sunderland fan in terms of quality of football, but I always disliked Ipswich for that, I'll be honest. And the 5-0 on New Year's Day, I remember that quite well.
Oh, Finidi George, yeah.
Yeah.
You did 4-1 in the New Year as well, I remember.
We did.
I remember Marcus Stewart's good. That would have been 2000. That was our amazing season. But yeah. I always thought that you kind of, with that one, because we kind of put a big spanner in the works then. And I remember you coming back next September and doing us 2-0
Phillips and John Mullen.
John Mullen, great show.
Yeah. Yep.
Scored and you went on and got a whole ton of points and finished first. Oh, it's one of those ones.
We actually that was a good season.
We actually did you a favour because you had a whole nother season getting really, really good. And there's no way you would have done your season in the Premier League if you hadn't had the extra season.
No.
You know, the one where Phillips scored a million goals. So basically, you need to thank Ipswich for that.
I can look back with with happiness now, but at the time, as a, I think I would have been 98, I would have been 12.
Oh,
yeah, broke my heart. That did.
Oh, sorry.
No, it's fine. It's fine. I remember David Johnson being up front with Alex Matthey, but Ipswich had a good side then, though.
We just lost in the playoffs every year, though.
Yeah,
so, yeah.
Because you had Kieran Dyer, Matty Holland in the middle. It was before the kind of Titus Bramwell years. God.
It was, yeah.
Jeez.
Another one who's played for both. Good. Listen, so going into Tuesday's game, can you kind of smarten me up? Who are we expecting to line up for Sunderland? And have you got a settled system and a settled team that you can kind of smarten us up with?
God, no. But I could probably guess who's going to play.
Yeah, guess.
He's been chopping and changing recently, but it'll be the Dutch goalkeeper in goal, Reuter, will be in goal. He seems to have got the number one slot. Right back, I'm not sure. It could be Adam Matthews, or it could potentially be Billy Jones. It's been Adam Matthews recently. Your centre-half pairing's been Kone and Wilson over the past few weeks. He might change that because Kone was horrific on Saturday, but he seems to keep his place. Left back will be Oviedo, who's been okay recently. And then we'll probably play with that kind of 4-5-1, 4-3-3 formation, depending on who's fit. So Catamole, as poor as he's been, will probably keep his place alongside Ndong in the middle. And then if they're all fit, you'll probably have McManaman on the right. You'll have Johnny Williams as the attacking midfielder. And then you will probably have Lyndon Gooch on the left with James Vaughan up front. There's a possibility, I would like to think, he might spring a surprise and play Duncan Watmore, but don't think so. I think it's too early for him.
That would be Watmore's first game back, yes?
Yeah, in about 10 months. Oh, yeah, wow. He played for the under-23s today, but it's the sound bites coming out from Sunderland and from Grayson is that he needs a week and a bit more time. But we need him. We definitely need him. But I think if McManaman and Williams are fit, he'll probably at best get on the bench.
So tell me about Johnny Williams, because absolute peak Ipswich would be have a guy on loan four times, never ever see the best of him. He goes on loan to another club and then destroys us. How has he been for you? Was he playing on Saturday?
No, he was ill, so I think he had a headache or something. I mean, I don't know what it was, but he's been all right. I mean, he's not been unreal. He's played like 3 or 4 games, but he's definitely got something. You can definitely see he's good at linking the play. He's small, but he doesn't seem to be weak. I think, yeah, we've talked to him quite well, quite fast, because he's quite industrious. He seems to be able to pick a pass quite well, and he seems to be playing in that number 10 role behind Vaughan, which, you know, bless him, playing in front of Vaughan. But I think the overriding thing with Johnny Williams is how much he looks like David Vaughan. That's the overriding thing.
There's a very poor hairline there, because he's only like 23 or 24 or something, isn't he?
Yeah, he's not blessed with the best of looks, but hopefully, you know, his talent is all in his feet and not his face. But yeah, he's been all right. He's not been
We just couldn't get him fit last season. And I remember him, he got fit, he came in against Wigan and he got smashed in a tackle and he was out again. And then Mick was kind of playing these very safe defensive teams and he just didn't use him towards the end of the season.
I think he fits into what we want quite well, and it's quite nice to have a guy who looks like he's not frightened to have a go, and he's definitely forward thinking, because Grayson seems very defensive, and with James Vaughan up front or Graben, you're not guaranteed a goal. Neither of them are sniffers. I mean, we've been watching Jermaine Defoe for the past 3 seasons, and now you get to watch that shit. Like, no offense to them, but there's such a gulf in class. But Johnny Williams seems to be at least somebody who could create something out of nothing, which we don't really have elsewhere.
I must tell you, as a 16-year championship veteran, Lewis Graben is more than good enough for if you keep him on and play in most games, he's decent.
He's all right.
Yeah, he's a decent. For the championship, he'll score goals. He's not Jermaine Defoe, obviously, but
I think that's the problem. Yeah. I think the problem is you go from seeing one of the greatest, most lethal English goal scorers of the past 20 years to Lewis Graben. I mean, Graben's been all right. He's got 3, but they were all in the first 2 games, and now he's. I mean, he's far superior to James Vaughan. Far superior.
You're not keen on James Vaughan, are you, Graham?
No. I mean, I wasn't at the beginning. Yeah, you know what? He's very likable. Don't get me wrong. He's very likable. And if I could inject his enthusiasm and his effort into some of the likes of people like Lamine Coney, maybe he'd have a use. But I just think he's a League One centre forward.
Yes, and I mean, he scored quite a lot for Bury last season. Yeah. But you're right, at that lower level. So, how do you see it? How do you see it panning out on Tuesday then?
We'll get beat. I think potentially we could get absolutely trashed. I have no confidence at all. Oh, yeah, like none.
let me try and give you some confidence. So we've had this weird run of games where we kept winning at the start of the season and kept getting more and more and more players injured and pulling off this miraculous streak of wins. Fulham came and outpassed us and destroyed us completely, but Fulham are good. Then QPR kind of out-intensified us. And then, strangely, so we beat Bolton. Bolton terrible, though, unfortunately. We went to Leeds yesterday and we lost, and it was probably the best we've played all season. But under Mick, the past 2 years, certainly, we've not been a side that's put anybody to the sword. I think we've scored 4 goals. I remember scoring 4 past Barnsley in a 4-2, but we don't often score lots. Unfortunately, the counter-attack thing as well, Mick will, you know Mick, don't you? He'll sit back.
I know Mick.
He'll sit back and not let you, not let play into that type of game. So, I mean, we're hoping that we've got this winger on loan from Man City that he might actually get a start and we might attack you. But as you just said, you know Mick, and that's, you know, it's kind of...
I'm surprised that he's been at Ipswich that long and not, because I mean, maybe it's my age, but I always seen Ipswich as like a side that would always push on towards playoffs and or potentially be in the Premiership. But and with Mick McCarthy, like, he's a bit like a different character, but he's got the knack of getting teams promoted, a bit like Warnock, not the most fashionable, but
I think up until basically until Evans came, up until midway Roy Keane era, that was true. Yeah. You know, our rank was between 15th and 30th in the country, I guess.
Yeah.
But it's kind of the last 4 or 5 years, and it's not all Mick's fault, but you get a big split between Ipswich fans on this. But some of it's Mick's fault, a lot of it's the ownership's fault, but you're totally right. It's dropped down to they're now, bottom half. So 22nd to 34th in the country is now their rank. And hopefully this season's going to be the one where it's back up into the top half and challenge.
Well, you're seventh, right? You're seventh off top.
Oh, it's been an amazing, amazing start. The strange thing, though, is we haven't had a fit first team side. Hughes, who we signed for good money, hasn't kicked a ball yet, and then all our 3 first choice centre halves all went by the wayside. So
what's happened to Martin Waghorn? I actually went to the same junior school with Martin Waghorn.
So
there you go.
there's so many. I'm thinking Marcus Stewart, Mick McCarthy, Roy Keane. You can probably
Titus Bramble.
Titus Bramble, Carlos Edwards.
Carlos Edwards. I love Carlos Edwards.
There's probably people yelling at their iPhone now as they're listening to this. But
thinking of Carlos Edwards now. We love Carlos.
Yeah, Waghorn has been really weird because he came in, played behind the front two for 45 minutes against Luton, then he played right midfield for 45 minutes against Barnsley, scored. Got played there again because of injuries and scored 2 against Millwall. Then he scored again from the same position against Brentford. And then it's kind of been, it's going to be Garner and McGoldrick up front, and Waghorn's kind of going to be on the bench despite scoring 4 goals in his first sort of 2 games. And I think he's going to go with Garner and McGoldrick for most of the season. So I can see, unless Waghorn gets the gig in a 3-5-2 behind the front two, I don't know if he's first choice. I mean, McGoldrick will get injured probably at some point, and Garner will get suspended. So he's always going to have bench time. But we'll see how that pans out. Okay, so a not confident Sunderland fan, a very honest Sunderland fan.
Yeah.
Let's have a bit of fun though, because we've asked everyone who's come on the show their favourite player since they've been watching, and you don't have to just go for the, you know, your favourite player might be a weird left back who we've never heard of. So you're a kind of 20-year or more than that veteran Sunderland fan. Best player since you've been your favourite player since you've been watching.
I'm going to give you a good answer here. I'm going to give you a really good answer, and it's an honest answer. You've got the Kevin Phillips, and you've got the Niall Quinn, you've got Jermaine Defoe. Yeah, of course, they're favourites, but my favourite player played for both of us, and I loved him, absolutely loved him. Chris Macon.
Wow, Chris Macon.
I love Chris Macon, solid. He was kind of a cult hero, though, because he played in like the successful Sunderland teams of the era, and when we went up with 105 points, we literally took the P that season. We were unreal. We were absolutely unbelievable. And every single member of the team, apart from the goalkeeper, had scored a goal. Like, bit part players like John Mullen had got one, Michael Gray had got some from left back, Melville, Paul Butler. Chris Macon never did. And we used to be so dominant in games that it was actually quite funny as soon as he got the ball to just shout at him, even if he was in his own box, shoot. So he got nicknamed Shoot. And he kind of became a cult hero from it. He never scored in that season, but it continued on, and he continued playing in a team that was successful, won at St. James's Park, used to back up Nicky Summerby really, really well. And we actually played Spurs on the last day of the season, and it was an irrelevant game. We couldn't go any further than seventh. We couldn't drop any further than seven, so it was kind of a pointless game. And he scored. He actually managed to score. It was just surreal because Chris Macon never scored. But Chris Macon for me, I mean, you've got Alex Ray as well, but Chris Macon for me was the hard-working player that was kind of likable. He would stick his boot into people. He'd kick the winger up behind. During a very skillful, successful team, he was kind of like, I used to play right back at school, so not very good, but and Chris Macon was always our right back, and I used to like seeing him kick people like David Ginola. So I'm going to say Chris Macon. I've got a lot of time for Chris Macon. Weird answer, but there you go.
No, the thing I remember about Chris Macon is that we signed him basically at our peak for the last, well, since Bobby Robson. That was the best we ever were. And he'd obviously come from being a successful team. I remember him settling in really, you know, just came straight in and could just do the job. And also, I remember he could play either side fullback, but he was a complete, he was a complete specialist fullback. You couldn't put him in any other pitch on the place.
No.
He totally just learned how to go up and down, win his headers. Do you know what I mean? He was a total specialist in that. And I think there was all sorts of funny rumours about some extracurricular activities with him. But I don't know if you heard any of those, but we won't say on the...
No, we have. I've heard many of them, yeah. Certain TV presenters, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Should we stop? We'll stop there, shall we? But he was an interesting one. Where did he go after?
He
I can't think where he went after...
Chris Macon.
After Ipswich, I'm sure. Again, someone's shouting at the...
I don't think he did much after Ipswich, because we signed him for like 500,000.
From Marseille, yes?
Marseille,
wow.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Got him from Marseille. He went from Oldham to Marseille.
Oh, Graham, we used to have a game. Sorry to interrupt. We used to have a game called the CV game on here, and Chris Macon was on there purely for the Marseille curveball.
The Marseille link, yeah. It's a total curveball because he was solid and typically English fullback, a British fullback, sorry. I can't imagine him ever playing for Marseille. I'm sure that was a myth. Maybe that didn't actually happen. He just said he did. But there you go.
Well, I hope it starts improving either off the pitch or on the pitch, and whatever happens for the best up there. Because it's a bit sad to see the you know, like you say. I remember going when it was. I remember you beating us 2-0 and it was 2-1. I think Niall Quinn scored two quick goals, and it was just
Matt Holland.
Yeah, he scored an absolute belter, didn't he? Yeah, it was just deafeningly loud in there, and you know, just it was a good place to kind of watch football. Yeah. So, general expectations for the season?
You know what? 2 or 3 wins can change the perspective of every football fan, but as we're speaking in real time, and we're absolutely shocking, I think we'll have a second successive relegation.
Oh my God! Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think honestly that I'm actually a glass half full rather than glass half empty, but you know, a spade's a spade, I guess, to use another turn of phrase. I just don't see where we're going to get wins from, but you know, like every football fan knows this, if you win 2 or 3 games, things change.
Well, and especially in this division, as I always say, you can lose a hell of a lot of games and still have a good season in the Championship. Okay, Graham, thank you so much for coming on. Where can we find you Twitter?
On Twitter, so I've got a bit of a weird Twitter. Is it a tag? Yeah, it's a
handle,
tag.
I think.
Handle, that's it. There we go. It's Asylum Doors, as in the Joy Division song, which I'm sure is a good thing. But yeah, I just talk a load of shit now and again, and mainly about Sunderland or Bjork. That's pretty much all I speak about. So there you go.
Bjork, indeed.
Yeah, if you like either, and I suppose I'll be quite interested. And if you don't, then I suppose I'm probably horrendously boring.
Well, I like Hermann Hreiðarsson, who's probably the other most famous Icelandic person.
Icelandic.
In the world. Indeed. So there you go. And it's Roker Report on the podcast, and you're probably going to speak about this Ipswich game next Sunday Ipswich fans want to download and listen to
We'll probably cover the Ipswich game, and I think we'll probably also cover the Preston game, I think.
Ooh, yeah, we'll Simon Grayson Aidan McGeady derby, yes.
Yeah, indeed, which we'll lose probably, but there you go.
God, stop it. Right, so if you've listened this far, you'll know that we are a 3 times weekly podcast, so you can subscribe on Acast or iTunes to get your fix. I am at Benjamin Bloom on Twitter and Benjamin Bloom on YouTube for match reviews. Facebook.com/BlueMondayITFC. And if you want to support the podcast, grab a T-shirt. If you look in the Twitter bio, you can do it there. Graham, we let all of our guests have the last word. So away you go.
Oh, geez. I hope you get stuffed on Tuesday. Not the nicest of ending, but I'm being honest.
There you go. Graham, thank you so much for coming.
Anytime, my man. I enjoyed myself.
It's the promotion running. Everyone is gathered round to watch. The McNuggets share boxes are there, offering much needed distraction. Your mate's already been booked for double dipping, but in you swoop to steal the last nuggets and claim all 3 points. Oh, and there is the Harry Clark fist pump to celebrate. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. You in at participating restaurants.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.